प्रदाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्तशास्त्री कोर्स। इन द 18th चैप्टर वी आर डिस्कसिंग हाउ कर्मयोग ग्रेजुअली एलिवेट्स थ्रू ज्ञान योग टू भक्ति योग, एंड विद इन द अरेंजमेंट ऑफ कर्मयोग वी आर डिस्कसिंग वर्णाश्रम, how the system of varnashram involves gradual spiritualization of one's material activities. So we discussed the qualities of a brahmana in the previous class. Let's move forward and discuss the qualities of a kshatriya. Yeah. So 18.43 shauryam tejo dhrutir daksham yuddhe chapya palayanam दानमीश्वर भावश्च क्षात्रम कर्म स्वभावजम्। सो शौर्यम तेजो धृतिर्दाक्ष्यम्। हियर वी सी शौर्यम, दीज आर द क्वालिटी क्षात्र कर्म स्वभावजम्। क्षात्रम कर्म, द प्रीवियस वर्स वॉज ब्रह्म कर्म, नाउ इट इज क्षात्रम कर्म। स्वभावजम्, दिस इज बॉर्न ऑफ देयर नेचर। सो व्हाट आर दीज क्वालिटीज, लेट्स लुक एट देम वन बाय वन। शौर्यम, शौर्य बेसिकली रेफर्स टू हीरोइज्म, करेजियसनेस, शिवालरी, वेर अ पर्सन इज रेडी टू डू एडवेंचरस थिंग्स एंड इज रेडी टू टेक अप ग्रेट रिस्क टू डू दोज एडवेंचरस थिंग्स। सो क्षत्रियस आर एज द वर्ड क्षत्रायते इति क्षत्रिय इंडिकेट्स दैट दे आर मेंट टू प्रोटेक्ट अदर्स, एंड फॉर द सेक ऑफ प्रोटेक्टिंग अदर्स दे often have to put their lives into risk, and they are ready to do that. In fact, they are happy to do that because everybody in life needs some source of excitement, some source of stimulation, some source of satisfaction. Now, different people get it through different sort of things. So, those who are brahmanically inclined, those who are intellectuals, they get it by studying new books, understanding new concepts, learning new things in terms of things which give intellectual titillation and stimulation and gratification. Similarly, kshatriyas, they have the sense of adventure. Another quality will say yuddhe chaapi apalayanam. We will discuss this. Yuddhe means fire, battle. Chaapi apalayanam. Apalayanam means not running away. So different people have their different sources of stimulation, and we need to understand that these stimulations are not necessarily in terms of right or wrong. They can be made right or wrong. We can say that some are material, some are spiritual. Say a devotee, when the devotee is remembering Krishna, gets spiritual stimulation. That is correct. But that doesn't mean that we can suddenly and completely relish only devotional stimulations. So we are at the material level of consciousness. Material level, there is goodness, passion, ignorance. And above that, there is transcendence. So the soul delights in everlasting and ever new spiritual stimulations with Krishna. So the devotee remembers Krishna, the devotee sees Krishna, the devotee touches Krishna, the devotee serves Krishna in various ways. And all this brings spiritual stimulations that are a source of great satisfaction. In fact, the supreme satisfaction, the greatest satisfaction. But till we come to the spiritual level of consciousness, we all need some kind of stimulation, excitement, satisfaction, and we get it through different things depending on our propensities. So shauryam. So shaurya is heroism. So by taking out means by fighting against evil, by fighting against those who are do misdeeds, and in that way winning, in that way protecting the innocent, protecting those who may be victimized otherwise, people get a sense of satisfaction, and that is the sense of, that's how they get their self-worth and their satisfaction. So that is what is talked about over here. Now this is not necessarily a wrong thing. Now this is, we may say that sort of stuff which movies are made up of, which in which there is a macro hero who is out to beat the bad guys, and that is attractive to people. So is that necessarily materialistic? Not necessarily. If it is within the precincts of dharma, that means the hero protects people according to the principles of dharma. So then that sort of protection is essential, because this world is a place of danger and is a place where there are evil people who are out to do evil things. So shauryam tejo. Tejo means power. So kshatriyas, they would have formidable power. You know, we may see bows and arrows, and we may have some small bows and arrows which children use for playing nowadays. However, the bows and arrows that the kshatriyas would use in their wars, they would be very heavy, very strong, and not very easy to use. Because, you know, for the arrow to have sufficient power so that it will go a long distance and actually penetrate the body of an opponent, it requires to be discharged with great force. And to discharge with that much force, the kshatriya has to have that much power to pull the string, and even the string has to have adequate power, adequate strength, so that when it is pulled back and then released, it will shoot the arrow. So same with the weapons. So nowadays when we use, say, machine guns or bombs or cannons or even weapons of mass destruction, the physical strength of the warring factions doesn't play much of a role. Although in face-to-face combat, in hand-to-hand combat or direct combat, it plays a significant role. But the point is, the kshatriyas have to be strong. So that is the idea of kshatriyas. Shauryam tejo dhrutir dakshyam. Dhruti means determination. So actually determination is required for everyone, for all varanas, but especially in this world, to get things done is not easy. Kshatriyas are essentially meant to not just do things, but get things done. Ishvara bhava. It is said that Brahmanas deal with ideas, Kshatriyas deal with people, Vaishyas deal with animals, and Shudras deal with things. So dealing with things is Shudras, dealing with animals is Vaishyas, dealing with human people is Kshatriyas' role, and dealing with ideas, concepts, principles, that is the realm of the Brahmanas. Of course, this is not a watertight division. Everybody has to deal with everyone else. Even the Kshatriyas deal with ideas, and even the Shudras deal with people. And but the point is, primarily we are talking about the focus of the thrust of each person's occupation is different. So for this purpose, to get things done is quite difficult. You have to delegate, manage. So one of the other qualities will be Ishvara Bhava. Ishvara Bhava. Now normally, so Danam Ishvara Bhavascha. Now Ishvara Bhava may be seen negatively. The idea that I am the Ishvara. So we often say that the idea that I am God, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, that is what has got us to the material world, and that's what keeps us in the material world. So that is considered normally to be undesirable trait. And yet Krishna talks it over here in more or less a positive light. He's describing the qualities of each varana, and he's talking about those qualities in a desirable sense, that these are good qualities which people in each varana should cultivate. And therein he is saying that the kshatriya should have Ishvara Bhav. So what does it mean? Actually, in this world, somebody has to take the role of a Ishvara. Somebody has to, if things are to be done, there has to be some controller. So if a project involves a team, and the team involves, say, 10 people working, or there may be some bigger projects involve 5,000 people working, so there has to be some controller who will direct and guide and supervise. That is a functional necessity. Every kingdom needs some governing authority. There has to be a king or some other governing authority like that. So somebody has to take up the Ishvara Bhav, the role of a controller. So, and that person, if that has the Ishvara Bhav, that means here Ishvara Bhav just doesn't mean the mentality, it also means the ability. In one sense, Ishvara Bhav is there in everyone. Who would not like to have other people who are dancing at one's beck and call and ready to obey everything that one says? So that is not the essence of Ishvara Bhav. Ishvara Bhav, as is recommended over here, is that we all understand that ultimately we are under the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Controller, and He is the Parameshwara. But to get his will done in this world, he needs agents. And some of those agents are also Ishwaras. That means whatever is to be done over here, it is done through agents. So even when Krishna's will is to be done in this world, there have to be competent people who do it. So that is how Kshatriyas come into the role. So those people who have the capacity, the ability to manage, delegate, lead, they, if they become godly, then they will become Ishwaras in the service of the Supreme Ishwara. So it's not wrong to be heroic as long as our heroism is not independent of Krishna's supreme heroism. Now we see in the Ramayana, Lord Ram is the supreme hero, but Hanuman is also an extraordinary hero. So in fact, the Sundar Kand, which is considered to be among the most beautiful, one of the beautiful, most beautiful Kand of the Ramayana, it is largely focusing on Hanuman. In fact, you know, Ram's mention is only right side, slightly in the beginning and at the end, but it's entirely about the exploits of Lord Ram, of Hanuman. So although Lord Ram is not present, still he is present in the Sundar Kand. That means he's present in the heart of Hanuman and he's present in the heart of Sita. So Hanuman is also a hero and he's also a great hero. People talk about being human. Bhaktas talk about not just being human, they were being Hanuman. What does that mean? To develop the Hanuman spirit. That the Hanuman spirit is to love and serve and act wonderfully in the service of the Supreme Lord. Kshatriyas are like that. So Shauram Tejo Dhruti Dakshyam. Dakshyam means expertise. So expertise in various things. When wars we fought, then how the forces should be arranged, how the military phalanxes should be arranged, what strategy should be used. Okay, I have this many forces and yet I have to attack an enemy which has more forces, better weapons. Then how do I strategize? So all this is very important to discuss. Dakshyam, that is expertise. Shauram Tejo Dhuti Dakshyam. Then Yuddhe Chapi Apalayanam. Apalayanam means never running away. Kshatriyas are so heroic that when they go out to fight in the war, either they go to fight to win or they go to fight to die. And they are confident that if we die in a dharma yuddha, then we will attain heaven. So yuddhe cha api apalayanam, apalayanam. One is not afraid to, one doesn't run away from the war. And then danam ishvara bhavascha. So Daan is an extremely important function of Kshatriyas. Actually, it's an important function of everyone, especially anyone in the household or order. Krishna has talked about this Daan earlier in the 17th chapter when he talked about Daan in the three modes. But along with that, he has talked about in the 16th chapter also when he talks about Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi, when he describes godly qualities. At that time, he describes Daan as a quality, a godly quality, and that especially pertains to Kshatriyas. So there it pertains to Grihasthas. So Danam is the inclination to give charity. So the idea is that the Kshatriya collects taxes and Kshatriya builds the national treasury, and people who are in need, the Kshatriya gives charity to them. Danam Ishwara Bhavascha Kshatram Karma Svabhavajam. Kshatram Karma. This is all Kshatriya Karma. This is how the Kshatriyas work. So these are the desirable qualities of Kshatriya. And if you look at the life of Kshatriya, like Arjuna or Parikshit, or even the way Krishna lived, we see these qualities that Kshatriyas display in their functioning. So now let us look at the qualities of Vaishyas and Shudras also. So Krishi go raksha vanijyam Vaishya karma svabhavajam Paricharyatmakam karma Shudrasyapi svabhavajam. So Krishna is describing in two lines, A and B, the qualities of a Kshatriya, of a Vaishya, and then C and D, he is describing the qualities of a Shudra. So Krishi go raksha vanijyam. Krushi is agriculture. Goraksha is cow protection. Vanijya is trade or business. These are the activities of a Kshatriya, sorry, of a Vaishya. So essentially, Vaishyas are the, if we compare the, so remember the comparison, the social body, the Shudras are considered to be the feet, the Vaishyas are considered to be the stomach, the Kshatriyas are considered to be the arms, and the Brahmanas are considered to be the head. So in this way, all these are important in terms of how they contribute to society. Every one of them contributes in a different way, and every contribution is significant, because every contribution helps a person to move closer to Krishna. Now when a person moves closer to Krishna, through, if that person is of course doing Bhagavat Arpit Karma, that means that person is working for the Supreme Lord. We'll see about Bhagavat Arpit Karma a little later. But the idea here is that every person, according to one's nature, can contribute to society as well as progress towards transcendence. So there is, the Varanashram arranges for material cooperation, and it also facilitates spiritual advancement. So Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam. Krishi is agriculture, Goraksha is cow protection. And some Bhagavatas translate this, some Western scholars, when they translated the Bhagavad Gita, they translated Goraksha as cattle rearing. But Prabhupada insisted that we can't translate it as cattle rearing, it is cow protection. Cattle rearing is often used so that it indicates that the cattle are reared so that eventually they will be slaughtered. But that is never done in the Vedic culture. Actually, now from a financial point of view, you know, any investment that doesn't give good returns, that should be abandoned. So for example, if a business person starts a business and then it doesn't give profit, it starts giving losses. So what would a business person do? Just abandon it. And we start another business, just give off that business. So that money-minded mentality is to some extent natural, but it can become undesirable if it dominates a person's consciousness and a person starts thinking of everything in terms of money. So to prevent this domination of the consciousness with money, to prevent a unidimensional viewing of everything in monetary terms, the Vaishyas are ordained to do certain activities even if they don't seem to be financially viable. So a cow, when she is giving milk, is considered to be productive. But when the cow stops giving milk, she may not be financially productive anymore. So at that time, it might be a temptation to slaughter it or to send it to a butcher, to sell it to a butcher to slaughter it, slaughtered. And that should not be done. The Vaishyas should consider that the cow is like a member of our family. The cow, that's why the word is often used, Gomata. The cow is like a mother. And even if the mother becomes old, the mother has given milk. If the mothers breastfeed the children with their own milk, the mothers love the child. So we take care of the elders. Similarly, one should take care of the elderly cows also. Now some skeptics argue that India has so many cows which people try to protect. And then there are so many people who are starving over there. So some skeptics, they want India to widely adopt a meat-centered diet and to take a cow flesh. They say that if India doesn't eat the cows, then the cows will eat India. That's how they try to play around with words and provoke people into cow slaughter. And they try to say that, in fact, there is a phrase in English called holy cow. That means if somebody has an irrational affection for something, which it is something which is considered to be very valuable, so sacred that it just cannot be questioned, then that is called as a holy cow. That's the phrase that is used. So for example, you could say that evolution is the holy cow of materialistic science. That means materialistic scientists, especially atheists, you know, they just consider the evolution is true, come what may. Come what may. They just think that this is what it must be. That holy cow, as I said, it means that whatever happens, they feel that actually this must be correct. However, this is not the notion that in the traditional Vedic culture is there about holy about cows. You know, cows are considered holy because they are dear to Krishna, and Krishna is the Supreme Lord. It's not just because of their financial value. Now, if some people ask that, if you allow milk, buffaloes give more milk than cows. Yes, it may be true, but Krishna is Gopal, he is not Bhaispal. You know, Krishna loves buffaloes also. Krishna loves all living beings. Surudam sarva bhutana. But he is a person. And as a person, he has certain affections. You know, why does Krishna wear a peacock feather? Why does not some other feather? Why does Krishna play a flute? Why not some other instrument? Krishna is a person. He will do whatever he likes to do. And his choices are sweet. They are supremely independent. And at the same time, they are supremely sweet also. So Krishna loves cows. And that's why Vedic culture exalts cows. But even if you look at it from a rational financial perspective, actually if a society is agrarian, is based on is centered on agriculture, then actually speaking, the cow can benefit a lot of people. So cow gives dung and cow urine. So cow urine can be used as a treatment in many medicines, as a medicine in and of itself, and as a medicinal element for many things also. And similarly, the cow dung is a very valuable source of manure. It can be used for fertilization of ground, and more importantly, it can be used as fuel. It's an invaluable source of fuel. In fact, in these days when people are concerned about the environmental costs of fossil fuels, they have oil and petroleum and things like that, which are sucked out from the earth. You know, that itself causes a lot of environmental harm. And then when they are transported over millions of miles at times to where they are going to be consumed, that transportation costs so much, and that transportation leads to so much pollution also. And eventually the fuel is used. At that time the fuel also sends out toxic fumes, which also cause pollution. So when the environmental cost of fossil fuels is so high, when there is already a widespread network of use of alternative fuels, that means there is use of cow dung as a fuel source, then why should that be disapproved or discouraged? In fact, that is the cow dung fuel is what is mostly used in rural areas for cooking, and it is extremely valuable and useful. So even if you look at it from the financial perspective, it is not true that Indians need to eat cows to survive. Rather, actually it is because Indians are eating cows, that's why survival is becoming difficult. Why? Because actually if you see, India was prosperous generation after generation after generation for millennia. Now, right from Alexander in the 3rd, 4th century BC, there are so many invaders who have come to India. What was the reason for invaders to come? Invaders don't come to poor areas. Invaders want money, and that's why they attack and try to loot wealthy areas. So where did India get its wealth from? And often when the invaders would come, the cities would be devastated, they would be plundered. And yet within a few years, the cities would again, or at the most a few decades, the cities would again become centers of poverty or centers of prosperity. Why? Because the cities were the centers of prosperity, but the cities were not the sources of prosperity. The sources of prosperity were the villages. And that source of prosperity came from the Krishi Gorakshavani Jim, from especially cow protection and from agriculture. So India is a was a prosperous land, and even now it can be prosperous if it has its priorities right. You know, if India has abundant natural resources, it has a very, in many most parts, it has a conducive climate. And now what we're talking about India at now, because why are we talking only about India? The principles of Bhagavad Gita apply all over the world. And not just all over the world, they apply all over the universe. Not just all over the universe, all of existence, which consists of many universes. But we're talking about India because as far as our historical memory goes back, our means human historical memory goes back from the perspective of modern history, then India is the land where Vedic culture has been present for several millennia. So the Vedic culture that was there, and the prosperity was there because of the cooperation between the different Varnas, and Goraksha and Krishi. They were the sources of prosperity. So in today's economy, agriculture is largely trivialized, and other occupations are glamorized. And actually, there's no reason to trivialize agriculture because it is the source of food for everyone. And that's why it's very important that agriculture be given its adequate importance in the economy, socio-economic structures and in the priorities of people. So Vaishyas were respected people. Now if we see the books like Gopal Champu, which describe, Gopal Champu is written by Jiva Goswami, and this describes the life of the Vrajavasis. And of course, the Vrindavan is transcendental. But at the same time, in books like these, we also see glimpses of Vaishya culture. So the Vaishyas were also very God-centered. And they were also having a lot of respect for Brahmanas. But they were also diligent in their duties. Even Krishna would go out to herd the calves. So the idea is that even the Vaishyas take care of playing their part in Brahminical culture. Now, Brahminical culture means not that it's a culture is meant for the Brahmanas or is only participated in by the Brahmanas. No, it is a Brahminical culture. When we use the word, it refers to a culture that is guided by the Brahmanas. So they are not the sole power centers, but they are the sources of moral and spiritual authority, and through them the whole culture, so whole society stays on a path of morality and spirituality. So that's Brahminical culture. Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam. So Vanijya also means that one takes a proper profit, but not disproportionate profit where one makes a huge amount of money while other people starve. So Krishi Goraksha Vanijyam. And then after that, Paricharyatmakam Viddhi. Paricharyatmakam Viddhi means serving others. That is the propensity, that is the role of the Shudras. Now why is it so serving others? Because actually a wide gamut of operations can, or activities in professions, occupations, can be included in the Vaishya activities, in the Shudra activities. But their basic role is that they are assisting other Varanas. And even Shudra is not necessarily a value judgment or something undesirable. If certain people have certain propensities, they act according to those propensities. So that is the way society lives and society progresses. So it's not necessarily any way wrong. The idea is, here it's not a matter of wrongness or rightness, it's a matter of appropriateness according to individual nature. So now some people also have the idea that actually women don't have any independent varana. Women simply, where do Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, where do women fit in over here? The idea is that women are just having the same Varana as their husbands. Now this actually, if you think of it from a logical point of view, it doesn't make sense. Because Guna Karma Vibhagashaha, it's not Janma Karma. So the husband may have one nature, the wife may have another nature. So if they have different natures, then one has to individually see that sometimes the wife may be more Brahmanical. And the husband may be more of a Vaishya nature. Sometimes it may be opposite also. So the idea here is not to label people as belonging to certain Varnas. It is to customize professions according to predilections. Customize professions according to predilections. Predilections means one's own inclinations, one's own tendencies. So, even from the logical point of view, the husband and the wife are two separate souls. They have had their own past, different kinds of karma, and they have been brought up, born and brought up, and then they are now uniting. So it's not that both will necessarily have the same varana. So in the Vedic culture, it would be best where a person would marry within the same varana, because then the likelihood of having compatibility would be greater. So that is true, but it's not that automatically, it's not that the woman is like an appendage to the man and the woman automatically has the same varana as the man. Now, the woman may have a different varana, but in general, marriages within the same varanas are encouraged so that there is a greater likelihood of compatibility. So now, after discussing about these different varanas, let's go on to the discussion about how all this can be spiritualized. So 18.45, Svesve karmanya bhirataha samsiddhim labhate naraha svakarma nirataha siddhim yathavindati tachrunu. So svesve karmanya bhirataha, by doing one's own karma, abhirataha, abhirata means to be engaged or to be following. To be, the word ratha means to be absorbed. So svesve karmani, svesve means one's own karma. So this will refer to what has been talked about in the previous three verses, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So whatever is one's karma, one acts according to that. Samsiddhim labhate naraha, a human being can attain perfection. And svakarma nirataha siddhim, that while being engaged in one's karma, siddhi. So Krishna is talking, using the word siddhi and samsiddhi in the third and second lines. Yatha vindati tachrunu. Yatha vindati. How one can attain this? O Arjuna, hear this. So let's understand this. The implication of this verse is very significant. Actually, varanashram can be of different types. That means that varanashram can be whatever, the way Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur has explained this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has also explained this based on the Vedic scriptures. He says there is Vedic Varanashram, then there is Asuri Varanashram, and then there is Daivi Varanashram. So Vedic Varanashram was based on birth, but in general in the past, the birth would be more or less compatible with the Varana, with the nature, with the Sabhava. Because say if a Brahmana and a Brahmani unite, they do it, they will attract a Brahminical inclined soul in their womb, as their child. And that's how one's birth would normally harmonize with one's Varana. But that was not necessary. There are, even in the original Vedic scriptures, there are various references which indicate very clearly that if a person has a different Varana, then that person should be engaged according to different that Varana. engaged according to the different varana. So rather than focusing on the point of birth, the focus was always on qualities, and if a person has a different set of qualities, that person can accordingly be considered to be a member of a different varana. There is a very famous anecdote of Satyakama Jabali, who wanted to go to Gautam Rishi for getting Brahminical education. And Gautam Rishi asked him, who's your father? And he went to his mother, and then his mother told that, I have been a maid servant and I don't know who your father is. So he went back and told that to his Satyakama and to his spiritual teacher, and he said, oh, you are a Brahmana. Why? Because you have the Brahminical quality of truthfulness. So actually, the Brahmanas are determined by, not just by birth, but also by qualities, primarily by qualities actually. So that is the traditional Vedic Varanashram. So what is prevailing in India today, and it has been prevailing for a good amount of time, is Asuri Varanashram. Asuri Varanashram means that the characteristics of Asuras is that they actually delight at the bodily level. All their pleasures are at the bodily level. That is Asuric inclinations, Asuric tendencies. And because of that Asuric tendency, what happens is that they identify strongly with the body. So even spiritual institutions like Varanashram, they reduce them to the body level and assume that, okay, one's body is determines one's Varana. And then the higher caste, they take power and they try to, they take privilege, and they, instead of cooperating for the growth of the social body, they exploit the lower caste for their own selfish purposes. And this is very, this has taken on often very ugly shapes. And because of that, there are lower castes who rebel against the higher caste. In fact, the spread of Buddhism and Jainism, which happened in Indian history, that is basically because culturally these religions offer the lower castes an escape way from the domination by the higher castes. And similarly, there is also an anti-propaganda in India based on political parties and quota allocations. All this is based on a history of exploitation, but that history of exploitation is not because of what is there originally meant to be in the Vedic culture. It is because of a degradation of the Vedic culture. So that is Asuri Varanashram. And then there is Daivi Varanashram. Daivi Varanashram is like the idea that different people, everybody is meant to serve Krishna. But depending on one's individual nature, one can serve Krishna. So normally in the Vedic Varanashram, the progress is linear. That means a Shudra, if the Shudra does the duty properly, then the Shudra in a future life will become a Vaishya. Vaishya, if does duty properly, Vaishya will become a Kshatriya. Kshatriya will become a Brahmana, and eventually Brahmana will become liberated. So that's how the progression is. But within Daivi Varanashram, the progression is vertical. It's not just linear, it can be directly upwards. That means that even if a person is acting as a Shudra or a Vaishya or whatever, if that person devotes oneself to Krishna, practices devotional service seriously, then from whatever Varna one might be, one can attain liberation. So Krishna is talking here about this Daivi Varanashram. He is not talking about the Vedic Varanashram, and definitely not talking about the Asuri Varanashram. So he is talking about the Varanashram in which Sve Sve Karmani Abhirataha. By doing one's activity, one can become liberated. Yatha Vindati Tachrunu. So let us see what Krishna is saying. Tachrunu. So we describe the process in the next verse. Yatha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam svakarmana nirtam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manavah. So Krishna is using the word siddhi once more in this verse. He has used the word siddhi and some siddhi in the previous verse. Siddhim vindati manavah. Human beings can attain perfection. And svakarmana tam abhyarcha. The key over here is whatever one's work one is doing, svakarmana, one's prescribed work, tam abhyarcha, worship that supreme being. So this is the closest the Bhagavad Gita comes to the common idea of work is worship. People have the idea that work itself is worship. But if we look at what Bhagavad Gita is saying, Bhagavad Gita never says anything like karma hi puja hai, nothing like that. Here, what is Bhagavad Gita saying? By your work, worship Him. That means, by devotion to the Supreme Lord, translate work into worship. Not that work is automatically worship. Rather, when we devote ourselves to the Supreme Lord, we spend time in worshipping the Supreme Lord, and then after that, we do work. Then that work, we develop a spiritual consciousness by serving the Supreme Lord, and then we carry that spiritual consciousness over into our world daily activities, and that's how we get ourselves spiritualized. That's how work becomes worship. So karmana tam abhyarcha. And who is that tama? Krishna has not yet come to the level of bhakti yoga. That's why he's still talking in the third person. So here he is referring to that Supreme Lord, and he describes the characteristics of that Supreme Lord. Yataha pravrittir bhutanam, from whom all living beings come. The pravritti. Pravritti can mean living beings. Pravritti can mean all of existence, from whom all of existence emanates. Now, Krishna has already talked about he being the source of all of existence several times. He's talked about it, especially in 10.8 when he says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Everything comes from me. So, yataha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam. So, that Lord is not only the source of everything, but the Lord, that Supreme Being, pervades everything. That Supreme Being actually exists in all of creation. So, it's like a parent who is the source of the children, but in the parent also extends himself to provide for the children. So, then if the parent is the source of the child and is the provider of the child, then what is the duty of the child? The child's duty is to cooperate with the parent. So, similarly, Krishna is yata pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam. He is a source and he is a sustainer, and therefore svakarmanatam abhyarcha. So, the Vedic Varanashram, the Varanashram system which Krishna is talking about is based on this principle of reuniting with our Supreme Lord, with our Supreme Father, through the spiritualization of our work, by offering our work for His pleasure. Siddhim vindati manavaha. In this way, one can attain perfection. So, Prabhupada explains in the purport that everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Rishikesh, the master of the senses. So, it is Krishna as Rishikesh, he is engaging us in the various services. It's not that we are doing the services on our own. It is He who is engaging us. And when we understand this is the role that Krishna has given me to play in His plan and His order of things, and I do my part in Krishna's plan. So that's how we move forward. Now Krishna, naturally a question will come. Okay, but there are activities which are not very easy to do, which involve some kind of mismatch. That Krishna addresses over here. Shreyan Swadharmo Vigunaha Paradharmat Svanushtitat Svabhavanyatam Karma Kurvannapnoti Kilvisham. So this, in the next verse, Krishna will address this problem of problematic prescribed duties. Problematic prescribed duties means that sometimes one may feel that my duty is too troublesome, therefore I don't want to do this. But Krishna is saying, no, Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna. It is far better to do one's own Swadharma. Shreyan Swadharmo Vigunaha, even if it is having some faults, Vigunaha, it's faulty or imperfectly formed. Paradharmat Swanushtitat, as compared to Paradharma, because Swabhavanyatam Karma, when one acts according to one's karma, Kurvan Napnoti Kilvisham, one will not accrue karmic bondage. The idea is that all of us have our responsibilities, and when we execute those responsibilities responsibly, then we progress. We progress spiritually. We progress in moving towards Krishna. So, Krishna is telling over here, better stick to one's prescribed duties. So, this is especially addressing Arjuna's concern that he is thinking that violence is undesirable. And especially violence against one's relatives, how can one do that kind of violence? So, better I should not fight. So, Krishna is saying that, okay, tolerance and forgiveness, they are the qualities of Brahmanas. So, in contrast, the quality of a Kshatriya is Yuddhe Chapi Apalayanam. So, that is actually an indirect reference to Arjuna's situation also. Arjuna, you cannot run away from the battlefield. That is against Kshatriya nature. You have to fight. So, he is saying that Vigunaha, even if it appears faulty, but you will become purified by doing your prescribed duty. So, it's like a hospital where different patients who have different afflictions are given customized medicines. So each patient has to take one's own medicine. One cannot take somebody else's medicine and expect, oh, that medicine seems more palatable, my medicine is not so palatable. No. Whatever is the medicine that is best suited for me, I take that medicine, and by that I get elevated. So Kshatriya's activity, Kshatriya Dharma, may involve killing. But killing is also essential for maintaining law and order. Violence is also required sometimes. So one should accept that. So Krishna will now give an example of how, even if there are faults, one should not give up duty because of that. Sahajam karma kaunteya sadosham apinatya jayet सर्वारंभाहितोषेन धूमेनाग्निरिवावृतः सहजं कर्म कौन्तेय. सो सहजं मीन्स विद बॉर्न विद कर्म इज सदोषम. दैट अलोंग विद कर्म देर मे बी सम फॉल्ट, बट इवन देर इज फॉल्ट न त्यजेत. One should not give it up. Sarvarambha hi doshena. That all activities have some faults. Just as dhumen agnir ivavritaha. Dhuma is smoke. Agni is fire. So fire is considered to be auspicious. Fire is used in yajnas. Fire is used for cooking. Fire is used for warmth. Now as compared to that, smoke is not considered desirable. Now smoke doesn't illumine. Smoke obstructs. Smoke may go into the nose and it may irritate. And smoke is not what is considered to be the mouth of Agni. So normally when a sacrificial fire is put, the fire should come out nicely over there. For that there is smoke. Smoke is considered to be obstacle. But whenever there is fire, there is smoke, and one has to expertly handle the fire so that the smoke goes away and the fire blazes forth. But one has to tolerate the presence of the smoke as long as it is there. So similarly, one has to tolerate faults in one's prescribed duties. So, even while doing any particular duty, there will be some things which are palatable and some things which are unpalatable for us. So, we recognize the certain things that are unpalatable and put them aside. Tolerate them. So, a Brahmana may have to do some fire sacrifice, some yajnas in which there has to be killing involved. So, the Brahmana understands, okay, this side of killing is there, I'll accept it, no problem. Because I do it within scriptural direction, then I don't get bound by it. I can still get elevated. So in this way, this whole section is telling us that one should act according to dharma and thereby get elevated. We will discuss now from this next verse onwards, the transition will go to jnana yoga. That we will discuss in our next class. Thank you. Hare Krishna.